Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Ephraim Zuroff, we're talking to him. Thank you so much for joining us, Ephraim, and for being on Hi FM.
Thank you for hosting me.
Now, of course, you are very world famous for hunting Nazis all over the world. This time you are reaching out to the Jews of South Africa. Perhaps we can help you with something that you're working on.
Correct. I've come across a testimony about the murder of the Jews in a city called Rasen. That's the name of it in Lithuania. Rasen Yiddish is actually the name, and the Ratanai is the name of the place in Lithuania. It's about an hour from Kovna. About 3,200 Jews were murdered in the summer of 1941. And among the murderers is a reference to a young woman who was a student who was particularly cruel. And she killed Jewish children by smashing their heads with a rock, or by taking two babies and smashing their heads together. Now, we were able to find two young women who emigrated to Canada after World War II who have her family name. But the problem is that we're not sure what her first name is. And without that information, we can't be sure whether those two Lithuanian women who immigrated to Canada, one of them is actually the criminal. So what we're looking for is anybody who has any ties or knows about any people who survived in Rasen, or people who have some connection to that city and to people there today who might remember this woman and be able to tell us what her first name was. Now, I'm purposely not revealing the family name because that could jeopardize the investigation.
So in other words, if you have family that's connected to Rasen at all, who may have been part of that incident and may have been affected, then definitely to be in touch so that you can discuss the issue further.
Right, that's one category. But another category might be someone who is not a survivor, but is someone whose family came from there and has contacts today in that city because of genealogical research or other interests. And can point to someone, can put me in touch with someone who could try and verify this woman's first name.
All right. So if anyone has a connection to Rasen, we definitely need to get them to be in touch with you, because it does sound, as you say, absolutely ghastly, the way that this was done. How can people, get hold of you guys and report these sorts of incidences?
Okay. So to contact, you can write to me on email, and the address is SWC, like in Simon Wiesenthal Center, JERUS, the first five letters of Jerusalem, SWC Jerus, @net.il. Or you can call me at 972 for Israel, 5721-4156.
So just give us the email again. I think that's probably the best way for people to get hold of you.
Okay, so it's S as in Spain, W Washington, C Center, J Jerusalem, E England, R Russia, U Uruguay, S Spain, @ NetVision, that's one word, NETVISION .net.il.
Okay, so that's the contact details. Now, Ephraim, talk to us a little bit more generally about the work of Nazi hunting. You know, of course, the Holocaust now, you know, several decades back, and many survivors are dying out, and I'm sure many perpetrators. Are we running out of time to catch the people responsible for the Holocaust?
Well, there's no question that we're running out of time, and we're approaching the end of the efforts to do so. But what's quite amazing, I have to say, and when I started doing this 40 years ago, I never anticipated that in the 21st century, well into the 21st century, I'd still be doing it. But what most people don't realize is that because of the extension of life expectancy, we are still finding people who were involved in those crimes and are healthy enough to stand trial. Now, these are not the major criminals of World War II, but let's take this case as an example. This is a woman who murdered Jewish babies by smashing their heads, and the cruelty of it and the hatred that motivated this woman, and the fact that she's an actual murderer, shows that, you know, these people can still be alive. If it's her, we're not sure it's her, but if it is her, we've found someone by that name, quite elderly, but healthy and able to face prosecution, if it is her, living in Canada. So the struggle goes on. In other words, we can't in any way ignore these people just because many years have passed. And when I think about a woman like this, a criminal like this, who did such horrific things, I would give anything in the world to be able to expose this woman, at least expose her, ruin her life, and hopefully even get legal action taken against her.
The other element which I've always found interesting in your work, Ephraim, is that you're able to pick in some cases where a potential trial can take place. And all over Europe, there's still a sense of sort of Holocaust, not Holocaust denial, but a denialism of culpability, where people say, well, this was a German problem, and basically our country, whichever that country happens to be, was not involved. And so by bringing these people to justice, you actually expose the conversation in those countries, so people can actually confront the past in countries where they don't have a sense in which their populations were involved with the Holocaust.
That's very true, and that's why this case could be particularly important, because Lithuania is one of those countries. Actually, Lithuania is a leader in the phenomenon we call Holocaust distortion. In other words, they don't deny that the Holocaust took place. As a matter of fact, last week there was a special Memorial Day for the Shoah in Lithuania, but they have consistently tried to minimize the super important role played by local Nazi collaborators. In Lithuania, over 96.4% of the Jews who lived under the Nazi occupation in Lithuania were murdered, and there were less than 1,000 Germans in the country. And we're talking about individual murder. This is not people who were sent to gas chambers in Auschwitz or in the death camps. These are people who were shot, and they were shot near their homes. 90% of those Jews were shot within several kilometers of their homes by, in many cases, Lithuanian collaborators. And this is something that the Lithuanians have had enormous trouble facing. And as a result, we see that there's an effort to basically attribute all the crimes, or almost every single crime, to the Germans and Austrians, and to ignore or deny the very important role that Lithuanians played. And there's no question that the number of victims would never have been as large as it was without that very significant help, because take into account that since everyone had to be murdered individually, and the Germans came to a country where they didn't know the topography, they didn't know the geography, they didn't know the language. I mean, all those logistics were taken care of by Lithuanians, and shooting, of course.
Now, your job, Ephraim, you're kind of like half investigative journalist, half lawyer, half detective. Talk to us about the process that you go through. If you're trying to track down someone who was involved in the Holocaust from 70 years ago, whatever, and now they might be in a different country, what are the sorts of things that you look for and the kind of processes that you go through to start literally finding people and then also sort of convicting them in a legal setting.
Okay, first of all, thank you for that question, because it's a very important issue. So when people ask me, what's my job? I say I'm one-third detective, one-third historian. That's my real profession. I have a PhD in the history of the Holocaust, and one-third political lobbyist. In other words, one-third detective to find these people, because no one is looking for them, with the exception of the Germans. Two, historian to find the evidence, which means either documents or witnesses. And three, political lobbyist, activist, in order to try and, very often I have to try and create political will to prosecute this person in the country where I think he should be prosecuted, he or she should be prosecuted. Now, that country can be the country where the crime took place. It could be the country that sent him to commit that crime somewhere else. Could be the country where they live. And here's a perfect example. In this case, we have a person who might be the criminal living in Canada. And the chances of this person being extradited to Lithuania, I think, are very slim because of this person's age. And we think it's important that she be brought to justice. And justice can take place in Canada. In this case, justice can take place in Lithuania. But it's far more likely that it'll take place in a present country of residence, which is in Canada.
And you say that the political will can be a problem. I mean, are world governments not really keen to deal with this, or is it an issue of people saying, well, it was so long ago, this people must just be let off? Why is it that you face resistance in terms of getting prosecutorial authorities to actually take this kind of stuff seriously?
Because they know very well that all they have to do is wait this out and ignore nudniks like me in the Wiesenthal Center and perhaps a couple of other nudniks, and the person will die. That will spare the country the embarrassment of the exposing the crime, which will also lead to exposing the incredible participation, incredibly significant participation of their countrymen in the worst crime in human history. So that will spare them the expense, that will spare them the bad publicity, that will spare them the embarrassment, and that's why they play for time. In other words, I can give you examples galore. It took us almost 5 years to convince the British government, for example, to pass legislation to enable prosecution in the UK. And many Nazi war criminals, especially from Eastern Europe, among them many Lithuanians, ran away to Great Britain. I had a case in Hungary where I worked for 5 years to get a person who initially was 92 years old, who was involved in the mass murder of thousands of Jews, Serbs, and Gypsies in the city of Novi Sad by the Hungarian gendarmerie and army, to put them on trial. And the only reason they ultimately agreed to put them on trial was when Hungary got the rotating presidency of the European Union, and the fact that he had not been prosecuted was incredible embarrassment. So there's a lot of politics involved here, and politics is a very tricky issue very often, very difficult issue, and that's why we need local allies to try and press for prosecution. And in Lithuania, I'm sorry to say, there are very few people who understand the importance of bringing these people to justice. We helped see to it that the Lithuanians would put three Lithuanian collaborators on trial during the 90s and the first, and last decade. But the Lithuanians did everything possible so that these people would not be punished. And there hasn't been a single Lithuanian who sat one day in jail for crimes committed during the Holocaust by courts in independent democratic Lithuania. In other words, the Soviets, after they occupied Lithuania at the end of World War II, prosecuted many, many of the Lithuanian collaborators. But once Lithuania became independent in 1990, and we found these people, I found them in the United States, in Canada, in Great Britain, in Australia, in New Zealand, and we were pushing very hard. People actually were kicked out of the United States because they concealed their wartime activities, and they came back to Lithuania. Some of them were senior, very major figures. Alexandras Lalakis, the head of the Lithuanian security in Vilna, had 100 people under his command, and his deputy, Kazis Kamčauskas. They were the ones who guarded the Vilna ghetto. They were the ones who took the Jews out of the Vilna ghetto to Ponar to be murdered. The Lithuanians did everything possible to derail the prosecution or to turn it into some sort of joke. And none of them were punished.
Well, there you go. Efraim, we are running out of time a little bit, but thank you so much for joining us. A fascinating discussion. If you are connected in any way to the Lithuanian town of Rasnau, please do contact the Simon Wiesenthal Center. We have given that email, and we'll also post it later on. Efraim, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Shana tova to everybody.
Shana tova.